Too much Zoom fatigue, keeping sane in a virtual world. Do you feel exhausted and creatively drained after taking part in a virtual meeting? Does the idea of meeting your colleagues on Zoom fill you with anxiety and dread? Do you get headaches? If your answer to any of these questions is yes, know that you are not alone. Even though virtual communication has been a lifesaver in many ways during this pandemic, enabling us to connect with one another, doctors, therapists, teachers, and more, it also has downsides. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss how to get the most out of virtual communication, tips on how to communicate effectively over a screen, and how to take care of yourself in this unnatural situation. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Anyone who has spent more time on Zoom calls and other virtual meetings these days knows the effects: becoming tired, stressed, zoned out. Today we will explore the impact that virtual communication can have on your psyche, get some ideas for how to ease the strain, and how to communicate more effectively on virtual platforms. My guest today, Blanca Girola, is a social worker and vice president of clinical services and operations for Maine Behavioral Healthcare. And Nick Morden is a communications theorist, speaking coach, and author. He founded the consulting firm Public Words, based in Boston. We invite your questions and comments. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you, Blanca and Nick, and I know that so many people are interested in learning from you how to better handle this virtual world, which we all know is probably not going to go away entirely ever. So Blanca, let me start with you. If you are someone who feels exhausted and just really worn down after a virtual meeting or two, a Zoom meeting or two, tell us why that is. What is going on in our brain that is making us so worn down?
I think we are learning that, first of all, moving from face-to-face communications to a virtual environment require new skills. We are taxing some of our senses that we didn't use as much before. We are relying a lot on what we hear and a lot less on what we see. We're missing a lot of verbal communications. So our brain is more focused to try to understand the messaging. It requires more attention, and it's more taxing cognitively. So no wonder we are exhausted. The first thing you need to do is to acknowledge that and check how you're feeling. Take breaks if you can. Don't try to multitask while you are in a Zoom meeting, because that also requires a lot more activity in your brain. But if you become bored or you need to turn your camera off, I think you need to establish rules in your meetings to say that that is okay. We are using our brain in a different way, and we, as you say, is going to be a prolonged kind of new work environment. We just need to create new rules and do more self-care than we didn't require before.
Nick, I know that you've studied this. In fact, you have a book, Can You Hear Me? How to Connect with People in a Virtual World. I love that word, connect. Are you actually connecting with people when we are looking at them, having a sort of a Brady Bunch split screen of just faces on that we're only seeing virtually?
Yeah, it's a really odd situation for our brains. There's a sense that they don't teach you about in school. We know the five senses, but there's a sixth sense, proprioception, they don't teach in school, which is a really important one, where we keep track of where we are in space so we don't bump into things, and where the people around us are in space. And when you get on a Zoom call, your proprioception sense goes crazy because it can't figure out where those people are in space. You mentioned the Brady Bunch sort of screen. Imagine six people standing 3 feet away from you, stacked on top of each other. What would your unconscious mind make of that? And so what happens is we have this low-level stress response. And by the end of the day, if we've done a number of Zoom calls, we're exhausted because we're in low-level stress mode for long periods of time. So I would just add and underscore the importance of taking breaks. And we'll get into a number of other things you can do, but don't try to schedule back-to-back Zoom calls all day long, because that's just like being in constant stress mode all day.
Blanca, tell me about the effects of seeing yourself on screen. We're not used to seeing ourselves when we're talking to others. Does that mess with us?
You know, it is so fascinating to me because we all look at ourselves in the mirror in the morning when we're getting ready. But I think we put our best face in the morning in the mirror. And then we came to work and forget about what we saw in the mirror and did our work. But now in Zoom, we're not only seeing what would you describe different faces, multiple faces in front of us, but including ourselves. And we are constantly monitoring how we look and how others are seeing us. And that adds a stress to the situation because you're wondering if your hair is looking okay, if your expression is what you wanted to convey, if there is some technical difficulty and you got frozen, how do you look? You know, all those little things increase the stress of the interaction and increases the possibility of not being able to connect and convey the message that we're delivering.
Do you recommend, Blanca, turning off your camera? I didn't even know that there is a way to do that on most platforms, on Zoom and on others, that you can turn off the camera so that you don't see, you still have the camera on, but you don't see yourself.
You know, it's like when you are doing public speaking and people say, don't focus on a point in the room or have different strategies. Develop a strategy that works for you. If seeing yourself is impacting or distracting you or you're increasing your concerns, try to focus on someone else. If you have the ability to establish rules for the meetings, ask if it is okay to turn the camera off. Ask if it is okay to turn off and come in as you are going to participate verbally. So as long as you have the ability to establish rules and people don't perceive you as dismissive or that you are rude because your camera is not on, I think it is okay. It's all about verbalizing the new rules and making clear what your intentions so that people don't misinterpret your behavior. Mm.
And I see here it's called the hide self view button. People will not even know you've hidden yourself. I want to ask you, Nick, about some tips. If you are on, I know that you probably have all sorts of tips for meeting people in person and good body mm-hmm. language and looking people in the eye and having an open countenance. What about on Zoom? What are some tips about communicating effectively on Zoom?
Well, one of the most surprising ones is that if you think about the typical Zoom interaction, it's people sitting at a desk or in a chair with the Zoom camera somewhere, looking at their face, and you're looking at these other people on two-dimensional screens. All right, so what happens then is that the other person is only seeing you from essentially shoulders up. And some of us stand in front of standing desks in order to mitigate this effect. But the issue is that when we only see head and shoulders, then we don't see your hand gestures. Hand gestures, it turns out, are very important for enabling us to understand what you're saying, a simple level of comprehension, but also your intent. And we use our hands to emphasize the important words and emphasize important syllables in words. And to show when we're really excited about something, And so it's as if we're not hearing the full story when we're meeting somebody. So one little tip is to bring those hands up into the camera. It feels a little awkward and strange at first, but once you get the hang of it, then you will communicate more effectively and in an odd way, more naturally with the other person if they can see your hands.
Interesting. Blanca, do you have any tips for connecting better over virtual platforms?
I think one of the things that I have found is allowing for the potential technical difficulties, having a backup plan. Sometimes you get the message that your connectivity is not as strong, and just telling the person, if I disconnect, this is the number where you can call and we continue the conversation. If there are some other background issues that you are concerned about, an unpredictable environment, a kid that may run in while you're in the meeting, or your pet, to put it on words and just say, if you see this in the background, please disregard, I'm in this place, or I don't have a complete confidential environment, let's not talk about this. So creating a psychological safety space when you're having a confidential conversation is important. Making sure that people understand where you are and you know where they are to make sure that there is no confidential information being heard by some other people. And I think what using as much as you can your nonverbal communications to express them verbally, like this was my attempt to make a joke, or my face, I cannot see you clearly, don't interpret my facial expression as part of my communication, I'm just trying to see you better. Those things that otherwise we wouldn't verbalize, we just need to be more active in making sure that the person we're communicating with understand what we're trying to accomplish.
I'm going to go to Grayson, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Grayson. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, Jennifer. Thanks for having me on the call. I thought I had an interesting perspective to add to this because I'm a freshman in the Maine State Legislature, and we were conducting a lot of the, state's business via Zoom. And I don't have, I'm new, so I don't have the ability to kind of make the, or I don't have the background and the relationships that a lot of, you would really depend on to get legislation and all sorts of stuff that legislators are supposed to pass. So it's just really interesting trying to create those relationships via Zoom and not being able to read people's body language and have that level of communication that I think is just so necessary, and to develop trust that it just in any line of work, it doesn't matter. But it's just an interesting situation that we're in. And, myself, I'm a millennial, so I'm kind of like pretty good on the digital platforms, and some of my colleagues maybe less so. And I feel bad for a lot of the chairs.
Grayson, I'm so glad you called in. And just interestingly, just the other night, after Governor Mills' State of the Budget address, Senate Minority Leader Jeff Timberlake was talking about the exact same thing, how frustrating it is for him, and saying the same things, that it's very difficult to establish relationships, to build trust. And he mentioned how hard it is for new legislators. And so let me turn to you, Nick. In that situation, when people are coming together to do very important work, very important and sensitive work that depends on building relationships and depends on building trust, how do we do that when we're working virtually?
Yeah, two things come to mind right away. The first is that we humans care, as much as we care about specific words in our communications with each other, we care more about the intent behind the words. And that's precisely what doesn't come through as clearly in virtual communications. Face-to-face, we can see the wink, the nod, the touch on the arm, the smile, the frown. That's where we get intent from. That's the wrapping around the actual words. In the virtual world, we get much less of that. And so making your intent clear is an extremely important part of establishing trust and good connections at the beginning. You need to really up your game in that sense. You can do it with your words by adding more emotion-laden words to what you're saying, but also just being clear about what you're attempting to do, being clear about the agenda, being clear about what's being talked about, saying, this is how that your comment affected me, and here's how what I intend for you. That kind of thing, you may need to do that strategically more or less in a legislative situation, but basically when you're trying to establish trust, that intent is the first and most important thing. The second thing you can do in this situation is we humans, when we're face-to-face, we unconsciously mirror each other when we're trying to connect with somebody. We do that physically, so we lean the same way or we gesture in the same way. It's very hard to do that online, virtually, on a video conference, and the scope is much more limited. But what you can do is mirror the words. And so I can make you feel a little more at home, and I can increase the trust with you if I use some of your language, some of the phrasing that you're using. So thinking about mirroring and getting your intent very clear will help create trust-filled relationships.
Blanca, anything to add to that?
This is a different environment, but one of the things that we consciously did when we transitioned from face-to-face meetings to virtual meetings in a virtual environment for most of our work was to establish different ways of connecting with our teams. Continue to do the rituals that we used to do in face-to-face meetings, like maybe breaking the ice exercises or allowing a moment in the meeting for a joke or a funny cartoon or something like that, so that we still have that sense of connectivity that we had before. And we did more frequent huddles. Instead of hour-long meetings, we may have a 15-minute more often huddle to just check in how people are doing. The things that used to happen casually, just socializing outside of the office while you went to to drink coffee, those things are not happening. So we had to make them part of the schedule with these huddles, just in asking people, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Instead of waiting for the casual interaction where that may have come up.
And Blanca, does it make a difference to reduce the number of people in that meeting?
I think after a year of doing these virtual meetings, one of the very surprising things for me has been we had to do a very extensive training, and it was a three-day-long training. And the trainer did an amazing job. There are some ways in which you can create interactions by going into different rooms and doing the typical exercises and the chat function. She managed it so wonderful that all of us felt that we were interacting almost as if we were in a room after many months of being isolated. So there are ways in which we can do some type of interaction and still connect if we use all the elements and the platforms that we're using.
All right. Well, Grayson, thank you so much for calling in and adding your perspective, and congratulations on winning your election. We do need to take a quick break. What are your thoughts about connecting virtually? What tips are you looking for from our experts? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling, with help from the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland. And by Bristol Seafood's My Fish Dish, garlic and herb buttered shrimp and three other varieties found in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
I'm Razia Iqbal. From the biggest breaking stories of the day to the important issues and trends, we're there.
This is an historic victory and what is a very important day.
This could change world history.
Everybody's going to pay a price. You will, everybody will.
And I am just so happy to be home and to put my feet on this land again.
Another huge development.
Join me and my colleagues for NewsHour from the BBC.
You can hear the BBC weekday mornings at 9 a.m. and weekend afternoons at 4 p.m. here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public members make public radio possible here in Maine, and we appreciate gifts of support of all levels. The Beacon Society was established to thank and recognize those members whose annual gifts reach $1,200 or more, or $100 a month. If you'd like more information about joining the Beacon Society, we thank you for your consideration. Please call Maine Public at 800-884-1717 and ask to speak to Scott Marshallton. Again, that's 800-884-1717 and ask to speak to Scott Marshallton, and thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the psychological effects of virtual communication, and how to make the most of remote meetings. Joining me, Nick Morgan, who is a speaking coach and communications expert. His consulting firm is called Public Words. And Blanca Garola, Vice President of Clinical Services and Operations for Maine Behavioral Healthcare. She is a social worker. Share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. So far in this program, we've talked about our frustrations with virtual platforms, but Nick, this has also been really a lifesaver in so many ways. And throughout the pandemic, I can only imagine what this world would have been like if not for Zoom, if not for other virtual platforms. Can you talk about some of the benefits of being able to meet on Zoom or other virtual platforms?
Well, first and foremost, of course, for profit-making organizations is reduction of travel expenses. And once the corporate accountants figure that out, as I'm sure they have already, then I suspect there's going to be a lot less travelers. It's going to be much harder to justify travel for business people. But the effect on the individual, of course, is that if you are a traveling salesperson, let's say you could get one call in per day because you had to travel long distances. Now you can get four or five in a day. So there's a kind of efficiency gain that is just extraordinary. And I think there's another one that goes a little deeper, though, which is that there's a kind of intimacy often in our Zoom connections because we're seeing into each other's homes more often than not. And people, of course, sometimes put up the virtual screens and then we wonder what's lurking behind it, whether it's dirty laundry or a messy room or something like that. But we're seeing in each other's homes. And you mentioned early on the kind of interruptions that might happen. And Blanca mentioned preparing people for that. Those interruptions can create a kind of intimacy and a humanity. And we realize we're all just humans in the end, and we all have things that go on in our houses that we don't fully control. So I think that that notion of intimacy as well as the efficiency are two real gains that that if we're careful about how we use virtual communications, that we can use going forward.
And Blanc, it's so interesting Nick mentioned that because I've heard that from therapists and primary care physicians and some others in the healthcare industry, that very point that being able to see a little tiny window into somebody's world, but also the intimacy that if you are a therapist, for example, and you're talking to someone on a screen, you're not sitting across the room from them. You are really just about 3 feet from them.
Yes. For us, it has been an incredible benefit during this pandemic, not being able to see our provide our treatments face to face. I cannot imagine what would have happened without this capacity of providing virtual treatment. And at the same time, we had to had very serious conversation about how to keep our boundaries, how to protect our our there is a sense of we want to be connected, but we also want to continue to be the professional and keep some distance. So what we want to show in the background, what are we willing to share with others, being conscious about what rooms are we using, all those things we have, and also teach our clients, please make sure that when we are in session, nobody else is there. Or that if you are in a setting where you're not able to have a confidential conversation, let's not. So those types, we learn along the way what is okay, what is not okay. And it's been incredible for us. This type of virtual work has allowed us to connect with clients that otherwise we would have not been able to. People that are in rural areas, we are able to serve them now. For our workers, there is flexibility in their schedules, not having to drive a lot. A lot of our workers are home also with their kids because of the schools being closed. And working from home has allowed them to do both roles, not with significant stress, but otherwise they will have to do other one or the other. So there are benefits. I'm also concerned about overdoing it, trying to set limits when to disconnect and really leave work behind and focus on your family. Those are things that we're learning as we go along the way.
Nick, I want to ask you the difference in communicate. You know, when you're trying to communicate someone well with somebody well, is it better to be on a virtual platform and looking at them on a screen on Zoom, or is it better to be in person yet having your half of your face covered by a mask and you're only communicating with your eyes? I'm guessing there are pros and cons to both.
Fun question. I would say net, it's still better to be there face to face because a surprising amount of your communication is conveyed by body language. We humans can detect very slight motions toward and away. We humans tend to move toward things that we like. We lean in, as the phrase has it, but we lean toward things that we like, and we open our eyes wide, and we can still see that, of course, even with a mask. But those kind of subtle physical adjustments convey a lot of information, and that's just much easier to pick up face-to-face than it is on Zoom or on video conferencing.
A lot of people have been talking about what the post-pandemic world will look like, and there's no doubt that telehealth will be expanded in the future. There's no doubt that we will have more, as you said, virtual meetings, that people in the business world will travel less. I have a friend who's concerned about what this means for young people entering the workforce, how they're going to be able to be mentored, how they are going to be able to communicate. It's kind of related to Grayson's question about legislators establishing trust and being able to communicate with one another. And Nick, I'm wondering if you have been thinking about if this is the future and this is the way that the business world will be working in the future, what kind of tips do you have for people who are coming into a situation in a new way for the first time virtually?
Yeah, I think it's a real problem. I'm very concerned about the two aspects of what you mentioned. First of all, the idea of mentoring. Mentoring is going to be very difficult in a virtual way. And then the other is to introduce people into a new workplace, whether it's a business or a not-for-profit organization. Learning the ropes and learning the kind of unconscious rules and the culture of an organization is going to be much harder virtually. There's research that shows that when you have a meeting where some people are present in the room, other people are on audio connection or video connection, that the experience is much worse for the people who aren't physically there. And everybody reports that those people are listened less to and respected less and included less. And so if it's the case that somebody new is being beamed in via video conference, then their experience is going to be substantially worse than the folks who are in the room. So what we really want to avoid is kind of a two-class situation in any organization where the senior people are there in the meeting face-to-face and junior people are kept on virtual forms of one kind or another. That would be very concerning to me. We need to make sure that we have a real understanding of digital fairness and inclusion. That said, one of the curious or one of the interesting aspects of video conferencing is that because everybody is essentially just a box on the screen, it seems to, and I only have anecdotal information for this, I don't have a lot of deep research, but it seems to help introverted people feel more confident to speak. And so there is a kind of equalizing effect that goes on that we've learned about over the past year that we perhaps weren't aware of before. So so there are some equalizing effects, but I'm very concerned with kind of two-level or three-level forms of communication in organizations, because that will hurt, that will damage the careers of people who mostly report in virtually.
We have a tweet here from Christine. She writes, "I feel connections in a whole new way. I agree. A new intimacy with coworkers has formed. I do struggle with disconnecting at times doing to my office, being in the living room. Pros and cons of both virtual and physical." And Blanca, this new intimacy, an interesting idea that we have to let our guard down a little bit.
Yes, that was a significant transition for us back in April, having to deliver services from our homes and making sure that we didn't cross boundaries, that we maintained the professional stand, and that we monitor what we were displaying or what people were able to see. And, you know, we're very curious humans. You want to see what book is in the bookshelf and what picture, and I think that's one way our brain copes with the new way of interacting. But we need to be a little more guarded in that sense. And at the same time, that sense of being equal. We're all humans. We all have families. We all have the same time set up in our home. So that has been great. At the same time, if you don't have a great home or room to where to connect from, that also can be a sense of shame. So I think we just need to be careful and talk about these things in a way that we'd never talked before.
Yeah, and a couple of thoughts for you, Nick. One, sort of the sense that we're all in this together. I'm thinking about, and I've been thinking a lot about the Zoom cat that made the internet rounds last week. But the fact that so many people could relate and so many people could laugh, it's sort of a bonding experience for all of us as humans.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's been one of the silver linings in the pandemic is that we're all experiencing it together. And so a huge number of us, those of us who are fortunate enough to be able to continue our work and to connect on video conferencing on Zoom, really do have a shared experience. And I think that's good for us. I think it's good for us to just to acknowledge our humanity and to relax a little bit. I'm just very curious the lighter aspect of this is when we do start going back to the offices, what are we going to wear? Because we've all gotten very used to wearing more casual clothing. And are we suddenly going to run out and buy whole new wardrobes or people come to work in sweatpants? What's going to happen? I'm very curious to see that.
It's funny you say that. I read that the sale of high-heeled shoes is down 70%. But Nick, I wanted to ask you what Blanca said about people perhaps being ashamed of their space. And this is one of the many questions. Are you more effective if you are sitting in your space or if you employ one of those backgrounds that you can put up behind you, a virtual background, whether it's a tropical island or just a pretty picture of someplace you went on vacation?
Virtual backgrounds have the unfortunate effect on people looking at you that it makes the proprioception dislocation that I mentioned earlier worse, because you can't figure out where that person is located in space. But for you, it may cover a room that you're not proud of, or something that you wish the other people not to see. There is at a corporate level, there's a kind of uniformity too. If you issue everybody a standard corporate background, then that kind of levels the playing field for everyone. But I would encourage people to the extent possible, just find a nook or a corner of a room where that you can get adequate lighting in, because one of the traps of video conferencing, and it's been widely reported, but I still see many people look like they're in the witness protection program, because the camera takes in much less light than the eye. And so to our eye, it looks like there's plenty of light in the room. We think we're going to look fine. But then when we're seen on a video camera, it looks much darker. And so just getting sufficient light and good sound, too, is really 70% of the game. And then the rest of it is making the corner of the room or the whole room look nice.
Right. We are talking about communications during this pandemic, and especially over virtual platforms such as Zoom. Are you somebody who has to do a lot of meetings on Zoom? Are they wearing you out? Or is the opposite true? Are you finding that you are enjoying this way of communicating with others? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering basement waterproofing solutions, easternbasements.com, and by Bangor Savings Bank, celebrating all the ways people all over Maine are making life a little better, bangor.com/spreadkindness.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Once COVID restrictions lift, British saxophonist Binker Golding says new Brexit regulations will make touring in Europe near impossible.
It's a lot of hassle getting different visas from country to country and so on, and it's very, very expensive.
Brexit and the music industry, next time on Here and Now.
Stay with us. Here and Now upcoming at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the Bangor Symphony Orchestra's Digital Masterworks 1, Bach to Block. Join conductor Lucas Richmond for a moving program of three works never before performed by the BSO, including Bach's Piano Concerto in D minor. The Bangor Symphony Orchestra's Masterworks 1 is a pre-produced concert available to the public to enjoy online now through March 13th. For tickets and complete details, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we are talking about virtual platforms, Zoom and others, and how that affects our psyche. My guest, Blanca Garola, who is a social worker with Maine Behavioral Healthcare, and Nick Morgan, an author, speaking coach, and founder of Public Words. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. An email here from Scotty. Scotty writes, strangely, I find calling people on the phone actually helps the video closeness. Call before or after. Set it up as a group rule, if possible. Blanca, what do you think of that idea?
I think it's a great idea if you need to prep for the conversation, or if you want to connect and say, I just want to make sure that the intent of my communication was conveyed, especially if there are technical difficulties. That's a really nice way to ensure that the message was delivered.
Mm. And Nick, when might it be better to just talk on the phone than to have a Zoom meeting?
I think any kind of regular ongoing team meeting, you should use a mix of video connection and audio connection, because the audio connection is less stressful in the long run. And when a team knows each other well, they can usually manage the conversation pretty effectively. And so I would recommend starting with the video just so you can see each other and make those kind of casual connections that are so important. And then after a few minutes, switching to audio. And let me stress again, that's not for meeting somebody for the first time. That's for an ongoing team that does regular weekly work and needs to do brainstorming and that kind of thing.
And one thing we haven't talked about yet, which I'm guessing is better on the phone, is that human beings need to move. And it's very hard to move when you're trying to stay in a box on a Zoom conversation. So is that a benefit that somebody can pace when they're on the phone or at least wiggle? Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a strong advocate of standing up when you're speaking on the phone. And I also advocate standing for video conferences, but most people sit at their desks for many reasons. But standing up and being able to move around, humans were meant to move. We think better, we're more effective, and we're more energetic, and our voices sound stronger when we stand up.
All right. Nick, you're sounding a little bit muffled, but one thing I will ask you is about the placement of the camera. Do you advocate to put that at eye level, if possible, as opposed to the camera on a laptop shooting up at the bottom of your chin or shooting down at the top of your head?
Eye level or just a little above, so it's looking down on you just a little bit. The shot you want to avoid is, as you said, shooting up your chin and or up your nose. So that's the really awkward one. But roughly eye level or a little higher is fine.
All right. We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry.
Hi. My wife has a rooster. Apparently the rooster's been heard on main calling. She also has those African birds, and the African birds were beating up the rooster. That's why he's here. So if you hear him, you hear him. What I wanted to say was, I'm a student at the University of Maine, even though I'm 75, and my class is on Zoom, and I very much like not to be seen, whereas I don't mind being seen. I usually sit in the back of a class anyway, but I don't mind being seen in a classroom, but I don't like to be seen in my room. And you were talking about that. And I just thought I'd pass along the things that I learned. It certainly freaked out my professor and the students. I listen to classical music when I'm not listening to you. And I'm 75 and they're students, and classical music is not their forte.
Blanca, I'm so glad Larry brought up being a student, because I wanted to ask you, we were talking earlier about the difference about communicating in person or virtually for business meetings or for therapy, but what about for the classroom? Are students taking in information differently when they're doing their classes online, when they're doing them virtually?
You know, this is an area where I cannot speak about the impact of virtual work or virtual classes without taking in consideration the pandemic and the fact that we are in the middle of a crisis, significant, prolonged, traumatic experience that is impacting all of us. And with that, we have learned that our brain has a reduced capacity to process information and to retain information. When you take that into the classroom and you're doing it virtually, your capacity to maintain focus, to the capacity to learn and to memorize and the knowledge that is being imparted is reduced. So I think what you need to do as a professor or as a student is to know that and to find other ways after the class to read the material or to try to comprehend what you may have missed. One of the good things about a Zoom platform is if you can record the class, you can go back to it and listen again, the section that you may have not been too focused on. Our brain does get tired of the extreme hyper-focus that we need to have. And this is another opportunity. You can go back to the recording. You can go back to the slides that we're presenting. But you have to do extra work if you want to fully learn what is being taught.
We'll go to Mark, who's calling from Surrey. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Okay, I'm speaking from a lot of experience lighting and taking pictures of people and running essentially a photographic company. And the point is, there's a lot of things people want to communicate when they're on a call, on a Zoom call or something like that. One of the things is people always want to look good, or at least they don't want to look exceptionally dumb, at least most people. So there are a few things. Some of this has been talked about, but there are a few little things you can do to help that. One of them is, a big one is lighting. You should look at yourself on the screen. Lighting, if it's coming from direct, your face has to be illuminated. The background, yes or no. Lighting that's coming from down below or up above, especially down below, can tend to look like a Halloween picture.
Mm-hmm.
So just try not to look like a Halloween picture. Lighting that's coming a little more from one side or the other is a nice effect. Lighting that's coming from behind, if you're taking a photograph, is nice. It puts highlights around you. On the other hand, depending on how it is, it's not so good for this kind of communication, because it can, on the other end, it can overcome. It can just overexpose. Another thing is, this is whether somebody's taken a picture of you with a camera or not. If you want to look in the, let's make believe like it's a photograph you're talking about. If you want to look like you're looking directly at anybody who's looking at it, no matter where they are in the room, you have to look directly at the lens. If somebody's taking a picture holding the camera low and you look at their face, then you look like you're looking up. Now, the problem on a screen is our instinct is to look at the person who's talking, and the camera is a little higher than that. And that little difference, that little bit of distance, can make a difference. It's not real critical. But now and then, if you're talking, if you want to make that personal contact we're talking about losing in this, look right at the lens when you're talking.
Mark, thank you so much for calling with those tips. And Nick, that's a really interesting point. I'm looking at the webcam that I'm using right now, and it is clipped onto the top of the camera screen. So if I want to communicate effectively with someone and let them know I am really talking to them in an intent way, or listening to them in an intent way, it would be by looking into that camera lens.
Yes, with the caveat that if you watch people having normal conversations face to face, what they do is they look at each other initially to start the conversation, make sure that they have each other's attention. And then the person who speaks maintains eye contact a little longer, perhaps, and then starts to look away as he or she launches into whatever they're saying. And then they tend to come back and make eye contact again when they're ready to hand the conversational ball over. So there's this whole retinue of looking away and looking towards somebody, as well as gestures, facial gestures, hand gestures that govern conversation. So you needn't feel that you need to stare at the camera the entire time. But there's this sort of misunderstanding that's developed that people tend to think they have to look like they're paying attention by staring at the camera fixedly the whole time. That's exhausting, and it's not the way we have normal conversations. Now, you do, to Mark's point and to your point, you do have to look into the camera from time to time, because that's what looks like you're making eye contact. But you don't have to stare fixedly at that camera the entire time.
That's a tip. I was a television reporter for years, and that's a tip that we will tell people, is to treat the camera like a person and glance at it, but then look away. Because if you're talking with a group of people, you're moving your eyes around, and you're mm-hmm. looking down, and you're thinking, or looking up into a corner and thinking, and so that's natural.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mark, thank you so much for your call. We're going to try to sneak in Rosemary, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Rosemary. Rosemarie, excuse me. Go ahead.
It is Rosemarie. My mother corrects you from her grave. But but I just wanted to say, I am a college professor at the community college, and I heard you speaking about what the effects are on students. And I teach English to non-native English speakers. And I find it about 1,000 times more challenging for them and for me. I can't build the relationship when I have students coming here trying to learn English and not knowing the culture, trying to relate to them and connect with them and have them understand my personality, my humor. It is almost impossible to do that virtually. And I find many of them are attending classes, lying on their bed with pillows behind them. They're not engaged. And I heard one of your guests speak about, you know, being able to record. I have not had a single student who would ever go back and listen to a class afterwards. They're not like their investment and their connection is so much less than when I had them in the classroom. And so it's been a huge difference and had a huge impact. And I have taught at the community college level for 17 years. This last semester, I failed 2 students, and in all of 17 years, I've only failed 1 other student.
Oh.
I say I failed them. They failed themselves. They just could not keep up with the work and just couldn't, you know, the ability to ask questions in the exchange and the relationship that they develop to one another in the classroom. I've tried everything, breakout rooms or, you know, all kinds of things.
Rosemary, thank you so much for calling. Yeah, and sharing your experience. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there nodding. We have just about a minute left. And Blanca, I know you wanted to end the program by talking about some simple ways to care for yourself and soothe your brain. So if you could do that quickly, we'd really appreciate it.
Yes, the caller who reminded us that he enjoys classical music reminded me that once our brain is so exhausted after several Zoom meetings, we need to soothe our brain. We need to lower the lights, dim the lights, or put candles on. Use other senses. Scented candles are very great for relaxation. Listening to music. Not go back from the Zoom screen to the television screen or to the Facebook screen. I think just doing something different, coloring, using your senses in a different way, dancing. All those things are things that our brain will probably welcome and will help with this Zoom fatigue that we are hearing so much about.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us for this hour. The voice you just heard, Blanca Garola, Vice President of Clinical Services and Operations for Maine Behavioral Healthcare. Also with us, Nick Morgan, a speaking coach and communications theorist. He founded the consulting firm Public Words and has written a book, Can You Hear Me? A Guide to Virtual Communication. Today's sound engineer, George Thomas. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, our panel of newspaper editors returns to discuss the top news stories from the month of February. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.